we are getting a briefing from, would I be right to say, the Faculty of Health Sciences at the University of Cape Town?
Yes.
The team is led by Professor Bongani Mayo. And God, change the same name, no good. What's the other one?
Teresa, Dr. Teresa.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you very much. You introduce the other members, if any, that has not been with you. We have people from the Western Cape Department of Health.
My name is Dr. Paul Chaparini. I am Director of Clinical Services at the Cardiac Hospital, which is, of course, part of the Western Cancer Department.
My name is
Tina Lentick.
I'm Director of
Professional
Support Services at the department.
I'm Caroline Kutzer from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Oh, I'm Dr. Khan from the Pharmacism from UCT.
Oh, okay.
I'm one with it.
I thought
you were
Professor
Mayer
from UCT.
Yeah, I thought you were.
And then we'll take your presentation, and I'm sure we'll support you and I have met. I didn't have time to also meet you even personally and to share a number of issues with you, I'm sure. And God has been harassing you with also other issues around those things. That appointment is still standing.
Yes.
So that's not saying what we is necessarily checked. Just need to communicate amongst ourselves, find some either to go to yourself to come here with the government, to share the process, and some of your views, and what advice is you would like to push to us as well to enhance our work, and also enhance what you're doing there, get some of your perspectives on some of the challenges. I think that implication is still holding. So, but what we thought we should do, because in our own view, some of the issues you were raising were quite critical in terms of the work we're doing, some of your observation about the challenges of health, etc. And we thought we should allocate not just a private meeting between yourselves and the chairperson, but also to ensure that what you are really dealing with influences also the direction in which we are really going to take in our interventions in our health system. That's why you will see Professor Green Thompson, who's an advisor to the minister, also being with us today. That's why you see the team from the Department of Health joining us today, so that whatever we do is not just a talk shop, but actually directed at changing the most difficult aspects in the life of South Africa, the health system of Wakanda. So you will introduce Professor Mayu to your team. Will I be right? Also from the department, at some point you will see things where you feel that certain, shall I say, comments, observations, clarifications, you'll intervene as we discuss. Will I be right? That's also your role here.
Chairperson, I wish that we can ask you already as an observer.
Thank you very much.
The question that I put to the Western Cancer Department of Health, we've been requested to record that question and to provide you with a response, but not necessarily a verbal response to that.
I think that's quite helpful then, because it will help us to go forward so that it reinforces what the chairperson was saying. I think thank you very much, Doug, for that. May we hand over to you, Professor Mayosi. I've heard a lot about you, many people. He has made a lot of physicians in the country, black and white. And most of them, I speak to them personally, are very impressed with the work you're doing. Thank you very much for coming here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nulu, and the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee for inviting us. I need to introduce myself. As has been mentioned, I'm Professor of Medicine and Head of the Department of Medicine at the University of Cape Town. But I'm also Chief Physician at the Kruger Hospital, meaning that I hold a joint appointment with the 51% of the share of my appointment in the University of Cape Town, and the other 49% is the Department of Health. So I work for the Department of Health, and I'm delighted that colleagues from the Department of Health are here. Our team, as has been mentioned, is made up of Professor Gonda Perez, who is the Deputy Dean in the Faculty of Health Sciences. Professor Marian Jacobs, who is the Dean of the Faculty of Health Sciences, is on her way. She should appear at any time now. And I'm doing this presentation together with my colleague, Professor Del Khan, who is the Professor of Surgery, the Head of Department of Surgery, and the Chief Surgeon at Kutskia Hospital. So I will go over a few points on slides. You will notice that there is a dossier that we have submitted, a full report that we have submitted and circulated. So my presentation will speak to that document to some extent and highlight some of the key issues. We were asked to brief you on the challenges facing healthcare in the Western Cape. And I thought that to do this effectively, I'll just do three things. Firstly, I will appraise you of the role of the faculties of health sciences in the Western Cape, and this is generic. It probably applies to all faculties of health sciences in the country. Secondly, I will comment on the challenges facing healthcare in the Western Cape as we see them. And then finally, we propose some potential solutions that can be considered by the committee and by all of us. Now, the faculties of health sciences do basically three things. Firstly, we train the health professionals for the country. So the faculties of health sciences, wherever they are located, they actually have a national role. So we train doctors, physiotherapists, nurses for the country. So that's the first function. The second one is that we train them on the health service. So we're committed to delivery of health care. And finally, we conduct research. Those three functions are very, very interlinked. And they are functions that we are given by the nation to do as faculties of health sciences. The one function that tends to be more local is the health care service one. But you will note that education and training and health research, those are national functions. So we contribute to essential national research. The discussion today will be related mainly to the healthcare service as well as the education and training. Although whatever you do, it tends to have an impact on all those aspects of our functions. I need to remind this committee that in our work we'll be guided by a number of principles. Firstly, we as faculties of health sciences work in partnership with a number of very important structures in the country. Firstly, the departments of health at the provincial and the national service. As I indicated, for example, my appointment, I hold it between the university as well as the Department of Health. We work with our other higher education institutions, for example, the University of Stellenbosch. We work very tightly with them in all our roles. The Medical Research Council is central in what we do. We work with non-governmental organizations and other sectors, and we work in a spirit of partnership with all these stakeholders. Secondly, another guiding principle in our work is the idea and in fact the imperative of transformation. We ensure that in our work we live up to the requirements of the Constitution, which are those of which are well known to members of this committee: fairness, justice, openness, accountability, and so on. And finally, given the history of this country, where we come from a situation where there are extreme divisions between the poor, who happen to be the majority, and the rich, we are committed to equity. We are committed to addressing the problem of inequality in health. And we work by the dictum from each according to their means, but to each according to their needs. We're very much committed to this, which is part of the reason the faculty adopted the idea of primary health care as a guiding principle in its work, to provide essential health care to the population. Now, I will touch on education and training before I dwell on the issue of health services. Now, we indicate in the Western Cape, that is the two faculties of health sciences at Cape Town as well as at Stellenbosch. We are responsible for producing about a third of all the healthcare workers in this country. And we do this training at the undergraduate level as well as at the postgraduate level and over a wide range of disciplines, including medicine, audiology, dietetics and nutrition, occupational therapy, physiotherapy, speech and language therapy. And in some of the higher education institutions in the Western Cape, we also train nurses. At Cape Town specifically, we have about 1,700 undergraduate students, about 1,000 of whom are medical students, doctors in training. We have a similar number of postgraduate students, and nearly 400 of those are trainee specialists. And in this work, we obviously strive to ensure that we meet the demographic imperatives of the country. Cape Town, as you know, is one of those institutions that lived by the letter of apartheid, you know, to the detail. In other words, it excluded the majority of the people of the country from training. Even myself, when I went to medical school, I couldn't go to Cape Town. But you will note that from 94 to 2003, there has been substantial progress in trying to ensure that there is normalization in the appearance of the trainees at our campus. This is just a snapshot of the undergraduate student body, which shows you that whereas in 1994, 57% of the students at the campus were white, by about 2003, that contribution was about 35%, with an expansion of particularly black African undergraduate students from 16% in 94 to 30% in 2003, which indicates some progress. Cape Town was a late comer in this. It only started in about 96, really, in about 86 in admitting black students. So they're making amends for the great delay in reducing this. I'm just showing this so that you have some idea of our work. Now, my talk will be, my briefing will be focused mainly on the health service. I want to make it clear to everybody here that we work right across the health service platform. In other words, I'm not speaking here for the central hospital, Hope Scare, Tigerberg, but I'm speaking here as a healthcare worker who operates right across those levels of care. We are active at the primary level of care, for example, at the Vanguard Clinic in Langa and Bontebal. We've even built a structure there where we teach, but we also are active at Hialeah as well as Retreat, and quite a few other community health centers in the Western Cape as well as clinics. And at those sites, we do three things. We provide a service. We teach students and we conduct research. We are also active at the secondary level of care, meaning New Somerset, GS Yorkshire, as well as Victoria Hospitals. And the kind of service that we provide there tends to be general specialist care in medicine, in surgery, obstetrics and gynecology, and other aspects of care. We are also active at the central hospitals where tertiary as well as quaternary services occur. Now, I want to spend some time on those aspects of care. Essentially, by tertiary services, we mean those services that are delivered by specialists as well as by subspecialists. The subspecialists tend to be those specialists who deal with particular organs of the body, such as the cardiologist, deal just with one organ, the organ doctors, as we call them. They are only present at the tertiary level of care. But what's unique about the Western Cape, particularly about Kruskier, Red Cross, and Tigerberg, are what we call the quaternary services. These are national services. These are services of a national nature, meaning that they are only available at this particular institution. So if you are a user of the public service, you can only get that particular type of treatment at Kruskier, for example, and I'm referring here to heart transplantation. If you're an African, and you are dependent on the public sector, which applies to 75% of Africans, then you can only get your heart transplant at Kruskier. So we serve the country when it comes to those particular services. And I also might add that in terms of certain services, we're even better than the private sector in this country. The buck stops with us. The buck stops at Kruskier. This becomes a crucial issue because it's an aspect that gets lost in terms of funding. There's no particular funding arrangement for these national services. We're supposed to take the money for these highly expensive services from the budget that has been given for the Western Cape. The challenges, Mr. Chairman, you asked us, what are the challenges? And I think, in a nutshell, there probably are three main challenges that we want to bring to the committee today. The first one is that of an increasing demand for health services. There is a relentless increase in the demand for what we offer. That's the first issue. That's the first great challenge. The second challenge is the problem of chronic underfunding of health services in the Western Cape. And finally, it is the problem of human resource shortages and inadequate career paths within the public health service. We believe that these are the big problems. Now, if you look at the problem of the increasing demand of health services, why is there an increasing demand for health services? It is self-evident that this probably ought to be the case in a context of an increasing population. The population of the Western Cape is growing. And therefore, if the numbers of people are increasing, they're going to need more services. There'll be more people requiring health care. So that's the first issue. The second issue, which is a very important one, and it's a particular one to South Africa, is the problem of an increasing burden of illness. So our population is not getting healthier. Our population is getting sicker. And there are three major waves that are causing this. Firstly, is the well-known epidemic of HIV/AIDS. And I will show you a slide to illustrate this problem. There is also the problem of violence and trauma. And the Western Cape happens to be the capital city for South Africa in this particular problem. And then there is the new epidemic of diseases of lifestyle, high blood pressure, obesity, heart attack, stroke. That's a rising problem. So we've got these multiple epidemics all occurring at once, resulting in a population that is not getting healthier and increasing the disease burden and therefore increasing the requirement for health services. The third problem that is particular to the Western Cape is the issue of migration from other provinces. We have a steady stream of people looking for health services from the Northern Cape, from the Eastern Cape. For example, I come from Umtata, and I know that there's the bus stop in Umtata. There's a Ruskia bus that comes. And of course, when I sit here in the casual, I receive those people who get off the bus and come to me for care. And of course, we welcome them because we offer a good service to them. The department has done a survey recently, which shows, for example, that there has been a 228% increase in process-seeking patients in the Western Cape recently, you know, which further confirms that there is a steady stream of people who quite rightly are seeking good care, you know, that we offer in this province. The final point, which is commented less on, is the issue of refugees. We have a significant refugee population in Cape Town, people from the DRC, people from Zimbabwe, people from other parts of the country, and at any one time on my ward, I have maybe about 10% or so of my patients being people from this particular part of the country. There has been no planning for that. There has been no budget for that increase in requirements. So all those four are major reasons why there's an increasing demand for health services. I will go on to show you that since 1990, there has been, in the face of increasing demand, a reduction in the funding of health services. I will also tell you that there is a plan to reduce what's available even further. The Healthcare 2010 Comprehensive Service Plan, particularly at the tertiary level, and as I said, there's no provision made for these quaternary and national services. Now, just to speak to that first challenge, the challenge of increasing demand for health services. I am just showing you a slide here of the front entrance to Kruskia Hospital. This is the emergency unit to Kruskia Hospital. And it is a very important illustrator because no one decides to have an emergency. You know, when you become very ill quickly, you have to go to a hospital. You can't plan this. So this is the front end of Kruskia Hospital. What you will see here is that in the year 2003 and 2004, we had 28,000 people presenting to the Footscare Hospital emergency unit. And in the subsequent year, this number increased to 31,000. And by the last time we reported, it had increased to 47,000 people. So this is a 68% increase in a period of 3 to 4 years, you know, of people needing care, you know. It's an emergency. We can't send them away. They need to be looked after. And then I I collaborated on this report, of course, with my colleagues at the Department of Health, Dr. Beth Engelbrecht, supplied me this data, which showed that, in fact, it's not just the front end of Footscare care that's experiencing this. Overall, in the health system, they are increasing patient numbers, and they are growing by an average of 6% per annum. And in the central hospitals, they're growing more, by 8% per annum, particularly in the 2006-2007 period, and this is measured by the patient day equivalent measurement. And in the regional hospital, the rate of growth is 4%. Now, I think this slide is an important one that the members of this committee should have a look at, because I have made the observation that the nation is not getting healthier in some respects. And these are data from the Central Statistical Services showing the numbers of people who die, the numbers of deaths on this axis, so from 10,000 to 70,000, and these are age groups on this axis. And what we have here is a different line at different years. For example, in 1997, in the age group of children up to the age of 4 years, there were about 32,000 children who died. And I will also just focus on the 30 to 34-year age group. So in that same year of 1997, we had 20,000 people dying between the ages of 30 and 34 in the country, all right? Now, South Africa has experienced this particular unique development in human history where we've had dramatic increases in people dying young. You know, normally you expect most of your deaths in your population to occur in this group, which was in fact the case earlier on in 1997, when the peak deaths were occurring in the 75 to 79 age group. But what we have seen between 97 and 2004 is that in the 30 to 34 age group, the deaths increased from 20,000 to 60,000, you know, the numbers of people dying. A similar effect is noted in the age group between ages of 0 and 4, where the numbers increased from 32,000 in 1997 to about 57,000 in the year 2004. So this indicates that in the population there are more deaths in those particular groups. Again, further showing you that the increased demand for health services is not for nothing. You know, the people are sick, you know, and we need to be stopping this by making sure that there are services to prevent this particular problem. This epidemiological sort of development is likely to be related to the HIV/AIDS tuberculosis epidemic. Now, against this background, what I'm going to do in the next couple of slides is to show you that from 1990 to the present, there has been a reduction in the health services, particularly at the category level. And I'm going to use a second example to show you this. This particular slide is showing you the numbers of professional staff at academic hospitals. This data is supplied by the Department of Health. And what it shows you is that in the year 1990 to 1991, there were nearly 1,000 professional staff employed. But by about the year 1999, this number had come down by nearly 40% to just about 600. And perhaps to give more definition to this reduction, what you will see in this slide is the number of health service posts that were lost in that early period. In other words, we lost about 4,000 members of staff in what you might call the academic or tertiary levels. There were also losses in regional districts as well as other levels. But the great area of contraction was done at the academic level. So we reduced the number of people to care for sick people. And this particular slide, again, is an illustration of what has happened to operations. This slide has been provided by my colleague, Professor Johann Fagan, just illustrating for you what has been happening to operations for people with ear, nose, and throat problems. What you will see is that the average numbers of operations at Kruskier up until about 1994 were averaging about 3,000 operations per year. Now, I showed you that, staff were cut. So when you cut staff, it means you then will cut services. So this is the impact on services, about a 60% reduction in our ability to treat people with ear, nose, and throat problems, such that by 2000, you had only about 1,000 operations occurring in this particular area. This 18 to 17 reflects the number of theater slates, opportunities to operate. Opportunities to operate were reduced from 18 to 7. Yeah. So this is the accompanying reduction. You reduce staff, so you reduce services in this particular way. No wonder when you look at waiting times for surgery, for cardiac valve surgery, for example, it's up to 18 months. And this issue of cardiac valve surgery is very close to my heart, because I believe that is really one of the iniquities of the system. The patients who need heart valve surgery are actually poor people. They've got a disease called rheumatic fever or rheumatic heart disease, which occurs after neglected sore throat, preventable sore throat. But when they require surgery, it's very expensive. So, the heart valves can cost up to 50,000 each, and they often need two, 100,000. Now, I compare these people needing heart valve surgery, who have to wait 18 months to get these operations, after 18 months, I compare them with those who need, for example, cardiac bypass surgery. The people who need cardiac bypass surgery are those who are more affluent. And they have to wait about 6 weeks. Now, the reason is that they have to wait for 6 weeks is because the spare parts for that surgery are on the person. So if you need cardiac bypass surgery, you've got blocked blood vessels, we just take veins from your leg. So it's cheaper. So it's a lot cheaper to operate on the people who need surgery for heart attack than those who need cardiac, who need valve replacement. But the point I'm making here is that the people who are impacted the most are actually the poor. The ones who need the most expensive operations are the ones who are impacted the most, having to wait up to 18 months, and they often die actually waiting for operations. Those are the other waiting periods for cataract surgery, about a year, and the waiting list of more than 1,000 cataracts. Joint replacement, long waiting list of more than 700 patients, more than 300 years. Colon cancer, people with cancer shouldn't have to wait, because if you have cancer, this cancer spreads. Yeah? So if you make someone with cancer wait, you really are, you're not doing your work. And you can imagine what this makes us feel, if people have to wait when we've diagnosed cancer. And of course they've got to wait because, there are no spots available for us to treat them. Now, what I was illustrating is what has occurred from about 1990 to the present. But what I want to take you through now is what is being planned. What is being planned in terms of the Healthcare 2010 plan is further reduction in the beds available at the tertiary level, as well as further staff cuts. So we're facing a situation where we're not delivering enough to the population, and we're planning to cut more, as indicated by this particular plan. And I'll show you the numbers to back that up. When you look at the plan that we are proposing here in the Western Cape to implement by the year 2010, the current numbers of beds, for example, at the tertiary level, they're about 1,600. In terms of the plan, they will come down, resulting in a 19% reduction. When you look at the funding envelope that is available, and which makes you understand why this plan has to be, because the funding is coming down by about 43%. The key point I want to make also is that there's a major impact on the staff, on the doctors. The plan proposes to cut the principal specialist posts at tertiary hospitals by nearly 40%, reduce them from the current 49 to about 30. and deep cuts are proposed for specialists by a quantum of about 51% from the present 235 to about 115. And we're planning to cut even the trainee specialists, meaning we want to produce less doctors for the country from this part of the world. A 43% reduction in the number of trainee doctors is projected if we proceed with the plan. The point I want to make is that what is of course planned is that there will be an improvement in the health services at the primary and the particularly the primary level, which we support very much. The idea that we must strengthen primary services, we must strengthen the clinics. But what you tend to do when you strengthen primary services, you pick up more patients who are sick. For example, we have a project in Thailand, which is run by Professor Jenny, which involves doing pap smears on women looking for cancer. It is an appropriate screening sort of program. But when you do that, you actually find more people who need treatment at the higher levels of care. And really, we think that it probably borders on being unethical if you find more people with serious problems, but you are not able to offer them the treatment that they need. This is the great dilemma that we have, that we will improve the detection of disease, but we will not be able to do much about it. Now, this plan not only impacts on what we can offer the population in terms of health services, but they have a very bad impact on our ability to teach. Because our teaching and training is dependent on adequate numbers of patients in bed. We have to have access to real patients because we teach on real people, unlike universities elsewhere in the world that train doctors on dummies. We don't believe that's right. And part of the reasons our doctors are very good and they are sought after, our doctors and nurses and other healthcare workers are sought after everywhere in the world, is because we train them on real patients. We don't train them on dummies. Now, if we are to cut on the numbers of patients in our health services, then we will find it very difficult to train. Our 800 students from UCT who are in the clinical training phases will not be accommodated. And our calculations show that we need a minimum of about 1,500 beds to train adequately. And this is more so because a lot of the patients that we admit are too sick to be used for training. Now, this does not only apply at the level of training doctors, but at the level of training specialists. And if you cut the numbers of surgeries available, it means that you are unable to train your surgeons effectively, because the training, again, is an apprenticeship. And the reduction in the numbers of registrars will have a significant negative impact. Now, I've painted a picture of a rising demand for services against a background of relentless cuts in staff and services. And the question that must be asked is, why is this happening? You know, why are we seeing this great mismatch here in this present case? There's a number of reasons for that. And to try to drill deeper into this, I've been in consultation with colleagues at the Department of Health who understand this problem much more than myself, because you know I'm a mere doctor working on the coalface, you know, looking after very sick people. So I have collaborated with Dr. Engelbrecht and other colleagues to try to ask this question: why is there this mismatch? Because all of us, you know, managers, clinicians, we want to do the best for our patients, and it turns out that there are a number of structural problems. The Western Cape, for example, serves 13.5% of patients in the country based on patient day equivalents, but receives about 12% of the national funding for health, and this includes the conditional grants. So that's a starting point, okay? So we're treating more people here, and it's because people are coming from elsewhere to come for our treatment, but we're getting less growth for that. And secondly, the issue of growth in the health budget of the Western Cape, it has just not kept up with the growth in patient numbers that I've shown you. You know, the growth in patient numbers, it's quite dramatic. And in fact, the case in point is that the provincial Department of Health projects that there will be a 201 million shortfall for the 2007-2008 period, okay, as a result of this particular problem. Now, the other feature of planning that does not serve the Western Cape very well is this feature that uses the patient, the population for planning. What has been found is that the patient load in the Western Cape divided by population is in fact 50% higher in the Western Cape than for the country. In other words, using population numbers doesn't help you measure the amount of care that is required here because of all these other inputs that I referred to. So it may be that at the national level, population may not be an entirely appropriate norm for measurement of budgets and costs. So that's a broad reason. But now drilling down much more and drilling down much closer, one finds that the special grants that are provided by Treasury to pay for tertiary services as well as to pay for health professions training and development are actually inadequate, because there are these special grants that are provided nationally for academic health complexes. One of them is the National Tertiary Services Grant, which has in fact remained constant in real terms. In other words, there's been no increase to cover the growth of patients. And the Department of Health here in the Western Cape has done a costing study, which has estimated that the cost of the Western Cape of providing highly specialized services is in fact of the order of about 2.5 billion rand, while the National Tertiary Services allocation is only 1.2 billion. So the National Tertiary Services grant is clearly not matching what is being done. And then, more specifically, in terms of the health professions training grant, which is allocated for all those places where health training occurs, because we accept that when you train nurses, when you train doctors, when you train physiotherapists, it's more expensive to do so. For example, when you get them to put up a drip, you may have to do it twice, and therefore there's a little bit of wastage associated with training. It has to be paid for. And this is what the health professions training and development grant attempts to do. Now, firstly, when you look at this grant, you will find that it has, in fact, fallen behind by something like 110 million in real terms over 6 years. Not only that, it is not enough. When you look at the numbers of healthcare workers that we train, about a third, but we only get 21% of this grant for the Western Cape. And a detailed costing study has also shown that there is a mismatch. It should probably be about 450 million, whereas the allocation, the real allocation, is about 333 million. The issue of human resources, which I'll touch on finally, and I'm now getting to my last slide. I'll touch on this issue. This issue is not specific to the Western Cape. I think this is a general problem, which is why I will not go into it in detail. The problem of the shortage of nurses and other skilled people in the health service, I think it is well known and has been commented on in detail. And it's a great limiting factor now, whereby even when we have the surgeon, the doctor, and when sometimes we're given the time to operate, we find that we can't because we don't have the trained nurses to do so. The issue of the limited career path for healthcare workers is a matter that's been commented on. It's being addressed, I understand. And following the strike in particular, I think there are very positive moves to try to deal with this. And in the Western Cape, when it comes to human resources, there's been a lack of agreement on the idea or the concept of the joint staff between the universities and the provincial government, leading to an inability to manage staff to the best advantage of all. Now, our job is not only to point out the problems, but to suggest ways of dealing with the problems. And there are many ways, obviously, of dealing with the problems. These issues need to be dealt with at the level of planning. And as I pointed out, we believe that the current planning is actually inadequate. It's not planning to meet the healthcare needs of the population. The issue needs to be dealt with at the level of funding. Funding usually follows good planning, or it should. And finally, there needs to be an appropriate framework for dealing with these kinds of issues, so that Professor Khan and I don't have to be shouting from rooftops when our patients are hard done by. so that these issues are dealt with timeously, they are dealt with in a cooperative way by means of a proper governance framework. Now, in terms of planning, my own personal view is that there ought to be a prescribed minimum benefit for primary, secondary, and tertiary care for patients who are using the public service. We have this requirement. The Department of Health has got a prescription for privately funded people that their funders may not fall below a certain minimum price tag level of care. We don't have this for the public service, and I think it's inappropriate. You know, people ought to know that at least this is the minimum package that I will get from my public service, and it should then be our job as clinicians, as managers, as policymakers, to make sure that we make that prescribed minimum benefit. And secondly, the issue of funding is obviously central here. There needs to be appropriate funding for health services, not only in the Western Cape, but also nationally. The health professions and training and development grants, as well as the national tertiary services that they need to be augmented fairly substantially. And from our point of view, we also need to be sure that we fund and implement the modernization of tertiary services program. This is a matter that I didn't dwell into, but I'm sure members of this committee are well aware of that particular program, which would go a long way towards addressing the problem of highly specialized services that are not well funded at the moment. And finally, the new National Health Act, Clause 51, says that the minister is empowered to propose a governance framework for the academic health complexes. Now, there's been silence on this particular issue, and I believe that there is urgency now to put life to this requirement of the new Health Act, such that we can put the academic health complexes on the right path. Because you can see in terms of our work that our work is not only concerned with local matters, but it's actually very national in nature. So the governance of this particular academic health complexes needs to take that into account, so that when provinces have changed their priorities and national responsibilities, such as training and productivity, do not suffer in that process. And so that there's also uniformity across the country in terms of this particular function. So finally, ladies and gentlemen, I hope I have shown you that I believe that public health services are underfunded in the Western Cape as well as nationally, and they are chronically so. And our fear is that they'll continue to be so going into the future. And we have also pointed out that the progressive erosion of services at the tertiary level in the face of rising demand clearly impairs our ability to provide adequate health services to the people of South Africa. The rise of access to primary care is impacted negatively by this. And this could have potentially irreversible effects on what are major national resources, national healthcare assets. And really our appeal to this committee is that a way is found to fund a package of essential healthcare for the population of South Africa at all levels of the health system. I will stop there, and I know that my colleague Del Khan has got other points to make, but I'll stop there and hand over to the chairman to take the meeting forward.
Thank you very much, Professor Mayosi, for your very good presentation. We shall open to members to comment and or ask questions. We open.
Chairperson, I actually just want to respond to one slide. The slide that is talking about the challenge on increasing patient numbers. We have an overall increase by 6% per annum of patient numbers, but when it gets to central hospitals, then it grows by
8%.
Page 3, I think, of page 3, right at the top on the right. Challenge one, increasing patient numbers. You have a disparity on the growth. There are central hospitals 8% and the regional hospitals is 4%. Would I be correct if I interpret these as either a mismatch in providing financial resources to these health centers, that at the regional level they are not receiving adequate resources, hence they are not able to provide the necessary healthcare system. People now are running to the central hospital. That's why we have got this disparity on the increase in numbers. I think that's the one that I just wanted to check. And the other one, the cuts that you have reflected on, would I be correct if I say they are seen at the provincial level? What will be the scenario at the national level? Are we not seeing the cuts at the Western Cape? Maybe probably because it used to receive much attention and resources in the past, and then there is a shift at the national level to other rural provinces to actually improve the level of service. Can we say the same at the national level?
Thank you very much. Maybe one needs to echo your same sentiments of appreciating the information that we got from Faculty of Health Services, University of Cape Town, from Professor Mayus. Excuse me, Chair. I should think Honorable Mashile has covered me with his second question of providing healthcare services to all the people of South Africa across, in essence, not maybe only focusing on the Western Cape, since it has been on the better side in the past. Indeed. Now, Chair, I just want to ask as to whether, again, this presentation is not one-sided. For instance, doesn't it reflect, for instance, anyway, it reflects the situation in the Western Cape, but its main focus, again, is only on a tertiary level and quaternary level of care. If you read this document carefully, it doesn't reflect much on primary health care, our clinics there, and what have you, our district health care services and the like. And I was hoping again that maybe some of the challenges that can be reflected in this presentation would be challenges around the services that are offered in our primary healthcare services, for instance, CMT, CT issues, XDR, and whatever issues. But the main focus of, according to me, its main focus is on that tertiary level of care and quaternary level of care. Maybe one needs to be clarified as to why, because we need a balance in all the levels of care at the end of the day. Thank you.
If I was going to say, are there any signs at all that increased funding and focus at different levels and in different provinces are relieving this, or could relieve the situation at the tertiary level or in the Western Cape, related to the other sort of query. And then just for me, I'm not fully understanding under what is needed on the last page, the framework for governance of academic health complexes. I was wondering if you could put that in a little more layman's terms so we can get a clearer sense of what we need to be seeing there. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I will just take them one by one, I'll try to answer them as best as I can. The first question from Mr. Mashile, there were two questions. Firstly, to explain the discrepancy in the increase for patient numbers, he noted that it seems that the increase at the regional hospital level was 4%, whereas the increase at the federal hospital level was 8%. So he wondered whether there wasn't an error there, or whether the 8% was not reflecting an inappropriate utilization of resources. I think what these numbers show is that there is pressure across the system. There is actually an increase in the numbers of patients requiring care at all of the levels, but that the greatest requirement is has been an increase at the tertiary level. Now, I do not believe that the 8% reflects inappropriate care. The 8% just reflects when we talk about the central hospital, we're talking about fewer hospitals. We're talking about just three: Goedscheer, Red Cross, and Tygerberg. When we talk about regional hospitals, it's a fairly large number that is spread out. But talking as someone who's worked in this system here in the Western Cape for nearly 50 years and worked in other systems, the health system here in the Western Cape works reasonably well in ensuring that people are seen at the appropriate levels of care. I work at Khayelitsha, I work at Yosa, I work at Goedscheer, and one can see very clearly the pattern of presentation of patients. I mean, you've got to be very sick to get to Goedscheer. So we have perfected the art of using the health system appropriately here, and we've published on this matter. In fact, Professor Benatar and Professor Vanessa Birch did a study recently showing that, for example, of the patients who are seen at GF Yosa Hospital, only about 5% of those patients needed to be referred to the higher level of care. They needed to be referred to Goedscheer, meaning that hospital did a very good job of treating the 95% of patients who are presenting at that level. So we can show quite clearly that the large majority of patient contacts occur at the primary and the district level, and then there's a pyramid effect. And I don't believe that the 8% really reflects an inappropriate use of resources, certainly not here in the Western Cape. So that's the one point. Well, the other point that Shekonda is reminding me here is that some of the acute illnesses, such as trauma and very sick people with HIV/AIDS, for example, are also responsible for that increase. Now, the second question was, what is the scenario in relation to this cut at the national level? Now, I am not qualified to answer this question. Okay, I must just say that upfront. Secondly, I must also say that the historic shift of resources to poorer provinces, to provinces that were not advantaged in the past, is entirely correct, and is something that that we all support, the shift of resources and the creation of equity in the system. It's just that we must not break the system. That's all that I'm saying. As we're trying to create that equitable situation. So that's my brief input on that issue of the national situation. Now, the other point made by honourable lady, I didn't get the name, Maximella, right? Is that this presentation is biased. It's focusing only on the tertiary and quaternary level of care. We've said nothing about the district health services. We've also not commented at all about a specific program such as XDR and so on, and that we need balance. I think this is the reason I was highlighting the interlinked nature of this health system. I mean, it's a system. It's a health system, and it works as a unit. And we are supportive of building the primary care services, the district health model, and we work there. You know, we work there, we teach there, we're part of the system. And we believe that it must be strengthened. But what we're saying is this, that the whole system needs to be strengthened such that as we detect people with illness at the primary health level through screening, that we are able to treat them when we do so. There is no point in us going there, finding people, for example, through screening with cervical cancer, and we cannot treat them once we've found them through screening. So it's a system. So we must see this as a system. And we want to move away from the idea that there is competition in this particular system. It's like a human body. There is no point in the heart thinking that it's better than the brain, because the brain will start, repeat the heart a lesson. Okay? So the health system is like that. We need to be sure that the system that we build is balanced, is working as a system, and we grow it as a single organism. This is why we're pains to show that the underfunding is at all levels of the health system. So I'm not going to really go into details, for example, about specific health problems. Now, the final question that I will attempt relates to the framework issue. Now, I have put that point there because the way in which the faculties of health sciences deal on the question of the health service platform, it is with the provincial departments of health. And the provincial departments of health have got a budget to deliver a health service to their population, whereas the faculties of health service have got a national mandate. They need to train competent doctors and competent specialists for the country. They need to conduct research for the country. And sometimes the needs for the country are not necessarily the same as those for as the needs for the province, which is why I think the idea of academic health complexes that are set up by the minister, run through a ministerial committee, I think that's a far-sighted idea contained in the National Health Act that will make sure that there is balance in the governance of the academic health complexes, so that decisions are not made at a provincial level that are detrimental to the national function of the academic health complexes. And those national functions are related to training, and they are related to national services, to quaternary services. Yeah. Thank you. I hope that helps. I'm inviting my colleagues here, Dr. Perez, Professor Perez, and Professor Khan, to respond if they feel that there is a point that I have not made clearly enough.
No, I think he made the point adequately, but the purpose of this presentation. I think there are further questions that we may answer.
There was this question of the Honorable Bradley.
Yes.
Now, your last slide, you were saying that you were making some of the public available.
Yeah.
And then you then said what then you were going to have to do.
Yes.
What Fleming and two are saying there is that he could not internalize exactly what you are trying to say.
In terms of the issues we're saying, that the question of planning, funding, the framework for governance of academic health complexes, that is the question of the national health. It was saying maybe you need more education on some of those points.
Thank you. I welcome that opportunity to expand on those issues. On the question of planning, I'm introducing the idea that there must be an attempt to match the planning with the needs, the health needs of the population. At the moment, it seems that at least to us, that what drives the planning process is available money, is available budget. And what we're saying is this, that there ought to be an attempt to make sure that at all levels of care, at the primary level of care, we're able to deliver to the population what the essentials of what people need, at the secondary level as well as at the tertiary level, so that we try to match our plans with the needs of the population. Because, for example, at the moment, one of the things that sometimes happens is that we just get told that you may not operate from this month because we've run out of budget. So we have to stop at that particular point and then resume again when budgets become available. Alternatively, we are informed that you may only implant a particular device one a month, you know, for the year, or 2 months, as the case may be, without a consideration of what are the real requirements, real needs of the population for that particular service. So that's the point on the planning. I think the funding issue, I dealt with that in a fair amount of detail, that the funds then would have to follow the needs. And I think the work done here in the Western Cape by the Department of Health is laudable work, where there's been detailed costing of tertiary services, as well as how much it actually costs to train a professional. And I think those kinds of costing exercises must begin to feed into the national process of budgeting. And then I was saying that, finally, the academic health complexes, we need to start implementing the provisions of the National Health Act, which the National Health Act sees the governance of academic health complexes as not only a provincial matter, but as a both provincial and a national matter, in which the minister has got a direct role through a committee that is prescribed by the National Health Act.
You want to tell me that a department in a province can actually stipulate how many operations a week or how many replacements are done?
I think my colleague here, I'm more in the consulting discipline. Okay, so I sort of make diagnoses and I hand over to my colleague Professor Del Khan here to do something about it. He's a surgeon, so maybe you can answer that very specific question. Are we sometimes told how many operations or procedures we may do? Maybe you can tackle that.
Talk to that point in my presentation to some extent, but there are already limitations on some forms of treatment that we are providing in quality hospitals. So, for example, the number of patients accepted onto dialysis are limited to about 70 or 80 at any one time. So, if we reach that target, which we do all the time, patient number 71 can be a young breadwinner of 25 years old. If he's patient number 71, he will not make it on dialysis and will be sent home to die. So we really have very strict limitations. And as I was showing my presentation, there is more of that coming. There is a directive at the provincial and at the hospital level to introduce quotas, where we will be restricted to the numbers of procedures we're allowed to do. All forms of operations. But I'll talk to that.
Can I just speak to the one issue of Christie Hospital, Tigerberg Hospital, on national resources? There are points where people get referred from all parts of the country, and therefore what Professor Bongani Mayoti is saying is that we should be treated as national resources and not be dependent on the budget of only one province.
Will you allow me to allow Dr. Khan to make a presentation? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alpha, no, I don't. And just on that point,
Mr. Mayorga is a physician, and physicians, generally speaking, are far more sophisticated than surgeons. For example, you know, he provided you with handouts, and you saw his presentation had a large amount of sophisticated and compelling data. Surgeons are far more basic, and so my presentation is going to be a very basic presentation. Can I just preempt my presentation by saying that we myself and Chris, we never actually discussed in our presentations, but you'll see there's a large commonality in what we have to say and our concerns. So the other sort of preemptive point I wanted to make is I wasn't sure of the mandate of this committee and how much influence it has on provincial matters, and obviously our problems in the Western Cape are mainly related to our interaction with the provincial government of the Western Cape. I'm going to dwell on 4 points, the impact of this comprehensive service plan on health delivery, not the tertiary services particularly, but the health delivery in the Western Cape. I want to make a couple of points on specific issues that we're facing at the moment related to the implementation of the comprehensive service plan. Just one or two slides on the budget, and just one particular issue on transformation. So if I can start by talking about the impact of the comprehensive service plan, and just to start by saying that the MEC for Health of the Western Cape and the Director General and the team, I think, should be congratulated on putting together an excellent plan. The comprehensive service plan is an excellent plan. We fully support the fundamental aspects of that plan, which is the primary healthcare approach, and I just want to emphasize there's often a misunderstanding between primary healthcare approach and a primary level of care. We have a levels of care which are primary, secondary, and tertiary, and we have a primary healthcare approach which embraces all levels of care. It's important to distinguish between that, and we certainly embrace a primary healthcare approach. We also, a major point of the comprehensive service plan is that we provide the appropriate care at the appropriate level. In the old days, first care hospital would have treated complex tertiary cases, secondary level cases, and level one cases. And that's obviously inappropriate. And the comprehensive service plan emphasizes that patients should be treated at the appropriate level of care, and I'll come back to that later. And there's no doubt that we fully support the need to improve the level one services. We support that 100%. It has improved significantly, and there's still a lot of work needs to be done on that, and we fully support that. But our concerns are the impact of the comprehensive service plan on both level two and level three services in the Western Cape, and I want to talk to that. And in addressing that, what I'm going to describe is the surgical services that we have in the Western Cape at the moment. And the comprehensive service plan impacts more on the operating disciplines, namely surgery and obstetrics and gynecology, than it does to the other disciplines like medicine and pediatrics. So I'm going to use the current structure of general surgery in the Western Cape to try and make my point. So currently, we have a division of general surgery within Hurstia Hospital, which is providing tertiary services. This unit functions at a subspecialist level. So we don't have surgeons in general surgery. We have a hepatobiliary unit that deals with complex liver cases, and it's staffed by Professor Borman and Kricker. Dr. Shaw, these are outstanding individuals, leaders in the field both nationally and internationally. We have a colorectal service, staffed by Professor Paul Goldberg and recently joined by Dr. Doug Stupart. Again, Professor Goldberg is a national leader and has an international reputation in colorectal surgery. Endocrine surgery headed by Dr. Paneri. We have a vascular unit headed by Dr. Naidu. There's the transplant unit where I work, an intensive care unit, and a trauma service. This is, a subspecialist service. Now, this service is part of this platform which Professor Mayorga related to. We have in the Hoërskool drainage area three hospitals which currently function as regional hoospitals. At GF Eustace Hospital, we've got Dr. Fenter, who's not a qualified surgeon, but has many years of experience as a surgeon. And Drs. Allard and Kasserich are both qualified surgeons. At Somerset Hospital, we've got, Dr. Kutley has just left to go into a vascular fellowship overseas, but Dr. Bogart is still there, and I'm hoping they will replace Dr. Kutley. And then at Victoria Hospital, we've got Dr. Lorimer, and Sean Long is like Dr. Fenter, vast experience in surgery, but not a qualified surgeon. These committed people are providing a general surgical service. It's a specialist service as opposed to a subspecialist service at Quincy Hospital, but these colleagues are providing a specialist general surgery service. It's also supported by registrars that rotate through the whole platform, and then medical officers that are based at those individual hospitals. We have what is taken many years of hard work established what we think is a common service platform, a seamless service. So there is interaction between the tertiary center and the regional or secondary level hospital at a patient referral level. So patients are referred in both directions on a daily basis. Cases that we regard as being of a general surgical nature, for example, an amputation or a hernia repair, would not be done in Hoërskool Hospital and would be referred to one of these hospitals. Vice versa, a complicated case with acute pancreatitis or complicated vascular cases would be sent through to Hoërskool Hospital. So it's a daily interchange of patients. We also have strong interaction at a consultant level. So every Wednesday morning, there is a member of the team at Hoërskool Hospital that does a ward round at GF Eustace Hospital. Most Tuesday mornings, there's a consultant from Hoërskool Hospital that joins the team at Somerset Hospital on a ward round. And we're building up a relationship with Victoria Hospital. As I said, the registrars are a common pool of registrars that rotate through the common platform. We also have common academic meetings. Every Wednesday, we have an academic meeting at Hoërskool Hospital. And the teams from Eustace, Somerset, and Victoria Hospital are allocated a slot at that Wednesday meeting to present interesting cases that they might see in their hospitals. We also have interaction as far as quality assurance. So these hospitals present their morbidity and mortality at our monthly morbidity and mortality meeting. So we have something which has taken many, many years to build up and what we regard as a seamless service. It works very well. It is something which I think most provinces would be envious of, that we have managed to establish that. Now the problem is that the comprehensive service plan plans to dismantle that. That these secondary level hospitals in the comprehensive service plan will become district level hospitals, staffed by non-specialists. There will be some secondary level beds at Eustace and Somerset, but the bulk of the secondary level structure will be downscaled to a district level service. And the proposal is that level 2 service will be taken up at Hoërskool Hospital. There will be some additional beds at Hoërskool Hospital, but the major concern is that there will not be any extra theatre time. And Professor Mayordi has already alluded to the cuts that we experience in theatre, and I just want to emphasize that point. This is the theatre list, the number of theatre lists per week for the various surgical disciplines, compatibility surgery, vascular surgery. This is what we had, not in the distant past, but in the fairly recent past, and this is what we currently have. Compatibility surgery has gone down from 5 theatre lists to 2, vascular surgery from 6 to 2, orthopedics from 46 to 17, ENT from 15 down to 7. It's from a theatre point of view, the surgical services are at a critical level. We're in a crisis situation as far as theatre time is concerned, and we're not actually able to deliver the service as far as theatre time is concerned. And that applies not only to Hoërskool Hospital, but across the board. I think the secondary level hospitals are also experiencing the same sort of problem. So it's not only theatre time, but it's also beds, and I just want to emphasize, this is the total number of beds in the province. Just to show how the numbers have decreased over the period of the 1990s. And that's the Western Cape over here, and you can see the bed numbers have decreased by almost 20%. So on a daily basis, registrars, the young doctors in the hospital, both at the tertiary at Crozier and at US the Somerset and Victoria Hospital, on a daily basis struggle to find beds for their patients and struggle to find theatre times. So to move all the work that's been done there into Crozier to us is just not an option. I just wanted to emphasize on this slide that besides the service delivery, we have medical students that are being taught there, and so teaching of undergraduates will be affected. And we also train our registrars there, and if we have to move that special service to a non-special service, we can't train registrars at these services anymore, and therefore registrar training will also be impacted. So basically, in summary, what from a surgical point of view we're saying, and I think it applies to obstetrics and gynecology as well, is that we have a structure at the moment that is working very well. There isn't much surgery done at the level one facilities at the moment, and if there were facilities available, we would take that on as well. But we have a service at the moment at a tertiary and a secondary level that is working very well, and the comprehensive service plan intends to dismantle that secondary level structure, which will impact on service delivery, teaching of medical students, and the training of registrars. So that's the overall picture. I wanted just want to bring one of my personal problems to this committee, which might not be the mandate of this committee, but currently, although it's a 2010 plan, it's the intention of the provincial government of the Western Cape to start implementing the comprehensive service plan. And so they want to start changing some of the service to a level 2 service. And I'm facing currently a request from the government, the provincial government, to employ a level 2 surgeon, which I'm kind of resisting, and I'll tell you why in a second, in the face of no additional theatre time or beds. And the rationale for introducing this level 2 service already now is the belief that 40-50% of the service that we do at the moment in Crozier Hospital is actually of a level 2 nature. And this is based on a study done by a Dr. Belinda Jacobs, which showed that the average across the tertiary services, both Red Cross, Tigerberg, and Crozier, correctly, 40-50% of the work is level 2 service. But if you look at the Dr. Jacobs, this is an extract from the comprehensive service plan. And if I just draw your attention to this line here, which states that a significant proportion of the services rendered in the central hospital can be classified as level 2 services, 45-50%. And this is confirmed by this study by Dr. Jacobs. But in actual fact, if you actually look at the Dr. Jacobs study, the level of care of admission to Crozier Hospital for surgery, these are the levels of care, less than 5% of the service that we're providing currently is actually level 2. So I'm having this debate with the provincial government, and I'm arguing whether we should be appointing a senior specialist, a level 2 surgeon, to do 5% of the work, and I'm sure it's not the mandate of this committee, but it's a problem I'm facing at the moment. Just changing tack again, I just wanted to address a point that was raised in the discussion. The problem with the health service in the Western Cape over the last few years is that it is a budget-driven service. The Director General of Health in the Western Cape is an extremely hard-working, bright, clever person, but he is bent on introducing a budget driven service, and he is extremely successful from that point of view. So from a political point of view, the Director General is extremely good. He ensures that this province comes into budget. So from a political point of view, that's great. But from a health point of view, it just doesn't work. Health delivery is extremely expensive. And so you might come into budget, but we will not deliver health to the people of the Western Cape. And so we are struggling to come into budget. And so the next step in trying to come into budget is this whole thing of introducing quotas. And we're already in negotiation with management in the hospital to try and try to get us to introduce quotas. So that's one of the big problems that I have with the health service, that it's a budget-driven service, not a needs-driven service. We don't take into account how many patients we need to treat, it's how much money we've got to treat those patients. Again, a personal problem that I have with the transformation issue. As Professor Mayodi emphasized, we fully support transformation, and at every opportunity that we have, we would try and transform. But there is a policy in the Western Cape which they adhere to very strongly of demographic targets. And unfortunately, Quirky Hospital is, according to the demographic targets, oversubscribed with Indian doctors. And so any young Indian trainee just does not feature in getting into Quirky Hospital. And I think I cannot accept that, coming from the history of this country, that we discriminate with any particular group of people based on their race or culture. I find this totally unacceptable. So, Mr. Chairman, just to say that I think Professor Mayodi took a bit of flack because he was emphasizing the tertiary service. I'm emphasizing the tertiary and the secondary service, because that's the services that we as surgeons are involved with. And so all we as surgeons are asking for, besides more money, but we're asking for to not to put more money into the tertiary service, but to retain the tertiary service at its current level. We need a bit more theatre time and a few more beds, but we don't need more budget, but we need to retain the secondary level structures that exist at the moment that are working very well. That's all we as surgeons are asking. And I'm saying that we as surgeons are not particularly asking for more money to pump into the tertiary services. Our main concern is the dismantling of the secondary level structures. And all we're asking is to retain the current structure that we have, which involves both secondary level hospitals in its current format and the tertiary service. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kern. Come back to the list of questions that were supposed to be taken. I think I had in my list Manana.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Let me thank the presenter for the information that they've given to us. Chairperson, let me start by the issue of the policy. That Indians are being discriminated in the Western Cape.
Can you speak louder to us all?
I'm talking about this issue of Indians in the Western Cape. Really, it is not the policy of this government that we need to discriminate other people. And if it is happening, really, really, it needs to be condemned by all means. And I think the Department of Health nationally is here. They need to intervene in this matter as soon as possible. It is not correct, and it won't be correct. The second issue that I want to talk about is the comprehensive service plan. If I can get clarity, when this plan was developed, as the faculty on health science, were you invited to make your input? If yes, what was your response with regards to this issue? If no, what steps have you taken to make it a point that you highlight you highlighted all these issues that they have raised to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you just clarify quickly this issue on the deposit of Indians, the Department of Health, Western Cape?
If I can respond to that. The policy in the Western Cape is that they follow the provincial demographics of the Western Cape in applying employment equity policy. That means that there's a very small number traditionally in the Western Cape of so-called Indian people, and preference is given to other racial groups that are more represented within the Western Cape. We've raised this issue on a number of occasions that we believe that maintaining the Western Cape demographics for the employment equity policy will reinforce former policies that used to give preference to certain race groups within the Western Cape. That the policy that should be followed should be the national demographics of the whole country and not just of the Western Cape.
I must say I'm not mandated to speak on behalf of the Department today. I'm mandated to be here as an observer. If there are questions the committee wishes to put to the Western Cape Department of Health, I will record those questions and make sure that the committee receives the response.
No, I think
it's
well. I was not listening
to what
all of us fully support employment equity. And I was looking at my address, the injustices of the past, as Professor Mayo himself was talking about. But actually, in degree and detail, we'll have to come back to it. And let's not make a judgment. I really request that let's not make a judgment, lest we make wrong conclusions at this point in time. All of the danger of the little information that can be exaggerated, and sometimes when it pans outside by people who write newspapers, etc., can actually write happy books and put in some of their own ideological concepts around the particular issue, rather than the substance that we're talking about. I'm really firm about this particular view. So I think I want us to just leave it for now. I think the question from Dr. Khan and Dr. Gonza Perez, we'll find a mechanism maybe as we conclude how to take on board some of the key fundamental policy questions that have been raised. Honorable, what has
been? Thank you, Chair. I've got a few questions from the first and the second presentation. Just to do with the first presentation on page 11 of your six documents, you said in the first paragraph that the tertiary hospital will no longer receive money from fee-paying patients, and the Department of Health will be using this for other projects. What other projects are these? What amount of money are you talking about, and were you consulted with regards to the project? Or was it just unilateral? And also, on your conclusion on page 18, you say an urgent appeal for once-off adult funding within increased and realistic future budgets of sorts. Have you, how much money are you talking about here? Have you had a meeting?
Sorry, you're talking to the chair. And if you're galloping and the chair can't understand, your question won't be sustained. Come back to page 11 and tell us exactly. You're not talking to Professor Mayur. You're talking to the chair. And the chair must understand.
On page 11,
otherwise it's
the first paragraph, first line, or the fourth line as well, from the word fee-paying patient.
Which document? The slide presentation?
The main one.
Yeah, page 11.
The first paragraph.
Yes.
Fourth line.
What does it say?
Do you want me to read it out?
Yes, please. Perhaps you don't want to ask the question.
Fee-paying patients will no longer occur to the academic hospital, but be used by the Department of Health for other projects. So my question was, how much money did you raise to fee paying patients? What projects will the Department of Health be using the money for now? And was the institution consulted with regards to what projects are going to, the money going to be spent on? Can I carry on?
Yes.
On page 18, the last paragraph, the second last line, an urgent appeal for one-off ad hoc funding with increased and realistic future budgets of sort. You listen? And that, they are asked what amount of funding are they asking for? And have they approached the MEC or even the National Department with regards to this? And if so, what was the outcome? And then some general questions as well. With regards to the impact on service delivery with the reduction in revenue in particular, have you had a meeting with the MEC or the provincial departments in this regard? And what was the outcome of that? And also, Dr. Khan, with the comprehensive service plan, have you shared your concerns with the department and with the MEC, right? And what was their reaction as well? And then I've got just one more question, Jay. Just with regards to the second year internship that doctors will now have to perform from next year on, obviously they have to stay at tertiary hospitals, so can't be sent out as I understand. So they have to stay at tertiary hospitals. And has any allocation of funding been given to Krutoszki or Tigerberg for the payment of these doctors for the second year internship to cover their costs? Thank you very much, Chair.
I'm so sorry, my wife here. How can I focus? I'll be on the wrong foot.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on the second page of the slide, the third slide, which talks about the quaternary level of care. I just want to find out as to whether all the patients who are coming in for major operations, are they there to pay for themselves? Is there nothing coming from the department to have them pay the fees for the operations or whatever? And on the 2010 comprehensive health care, I have thought that indeed the budget for 2010 will be increased because of the road accidents and maybe the injuries from the playing fields and things like that. But why the cut? I don't know whether because the Western State Department is not there and will not be able to get answers, I'm not sure.
The comprehensive, what do you call the thing? Comprehensive Service Plan 2010. Does not necessarily relate to the Soccer World Cup 2010. It's what they used to call earlier on, would that be right? F 2010. But now it's CFP 2010. So the cards are related not to the soccer part of it. Yeah, not necessarily, but to the actual plan, the Department of Health plan. Given it a name, CSP. I don't know why they've chosen the name, but would that be right to paraphrase it that way? Thank you very much.
Is there one other question?
Thank you very much. Mandela?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, sir. I also wish to add my appreciation for the two presentations. I certainly believe you will get a copy of the Dr. Professor Khan's presentation. I would wish to cross two things. One is, Chair, and perhaps this is one thing that one is grappling with, is that this presentation made by Professor Mayosi is essentially from a faculty, UCT's perspective. And it focused in the main on Krutoszki Hospital. It does, by the way, mention Tigerberg and in particular Red Cross Hospital. So one doesn't really get a good sense of the challenges that are brought in, what the faculty is facing. They mention of the cooperation with the health faculty at Stellenbosch University, but certainly UWC also has some form of health services that they provide. No mentioning have been made around of that at all, Chair. One certainly appreciates the challenges that they have raised insofar in particular as they experience it at Protoskier Hospital and in particular their drainage area. The one question I wish to ask, and in this slide on page, I think it's page three, uses the first slide on one challenge, the increasing demand for health services. Now, I'm just a little bit confused. I'm not quite sure. Maybe there's a very good reason for this huge escalation. If one looks at the second and the third bar, 2004, 2006, for that period, there's a 17,000 increase in the emergency unit, 68% now over 4 years. Now the question is, what happened in between 2004 and 2006 in that particular 1 year? Were there major national or natural disasters? Were there I don't know. There have to be some logical explanation for this huge increase. And then, importantly, CEO Yuster also have a trauma unit, Vanguard also, and Somerset Hospital itself also. Now, clearly, does it mean that those trauma units at those hospitals have closed down for that particular period, so that they're all being referred to Krutuski? That is the one question. And then, Chair, the issue around the comprehensive service plan relating to the downscaling of much of these regional hospitals in the form of Sierra Vista, etc., Victoria, etc., to district hospitals. So what would be, in your mind, the rationale behind that? What's the motivation for that? You have indicated how it would impact on your services. So one want to have a sense of what informed provincial health authority to do that. Perhaps it links to the question that Honorable Walters have asked with regard to the issue of engagement consultation with yourself, Chair. The issue on page 4, again, the challenge relating to the beds, the availability of beds, and you indicate that certainly in terms of health. This is the last slide on page 4. You indicate there would be a 19% reduction in accordance to healthcare 2010. What one picked up in the media in particular is that those beds would be transferred, or the idea would be to transfer it from a tertiary hospital to a level one facility. I want to understand that there would not be a simultaneous transfer of staff at the same time, which means at the end it would be a net gain for Protoskier Hospital, because the work, I mean, that's a layman's perspective, said the work is transferred, the patients is transferred, which means the staff, the equipment and everything else stays where we put, and it means that the component of a budget relating to that will stay with it is in relation to the staff and equipment and etc. while the work is now transferred. Is that the understanding? Of, perhaps you can explain to us a different one, so that we certainly have a sense of what's going on, and especially when we the chair engage the provincial health authorities, then one has a sense of what are the problems. Thank you.
Why don't I make a
request
to your sponsors, and then I'll take a quite a lot of compound questions.
Okay, I'll take the question by Mr. Waters. He asked a question based on the detailed submission on page 11. And that section of the detailed submission deals with a matter that we did not discuss in detail today, because today we tried to focus on broad principles. It relates to the specific matter of the budget cuts that were proposed at the beginning of the year. It was a matter of public interest. So it was very specific, which called for a shift of 30 million rand from the central hospital and a closure of 60 beds. So the question relates to that. Now, coupled with that decision was also a suggestion that the central hospital will not keep the fees paid by fee-paying patients. So the fee-paying patients would either pay out of pocket or from their medical aid, and normally the central hospitals would have a way of keeping those revenues locally, which was one of the ways in which it allowed the central hospitals to conduct certain strategic projects if they were profitable. So we were informed at the time that coupled with this shift of 30 million, we will no longer be keeping the budget for the fee-paying patients. It's one of the reasons we said at Rutschke, if they close the bed at all, then they'll have to close the private bed, okay, because we're not going to be keeping the money. That was the case. Now, we, Mr. Waters, did have a lot of discussions with the MEC, with the head of health, so there was a lot of discussion about this particular issue. And the official stand of the Department of Health was and the local cabinet was that the decision was taken, and so far as we know, that decision still stands. So I think the question in relation to what projects and so on should possibly be addressed to the Department of Health. Now, you also referred to the last page. The request of the last page was to say that we believe that really budget cuts at this stage are inappropriate in the face of all the things that we pointed out, that a way ought to be found for funding this. Okay, this appeal has been made to the MSC, has been made to the Head of Health, and we know that they are working hard to try to achieve this within the limitations of the public health service. So I think this request has been, listened to favorably, but we don't know whether there's been any success in request to local treasury as well as to national for a respite on this particular matter. I don't know, Del, if you want to take those points too.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, can I just talk to the issue of the fee-paying patients? A small percentage of patients that come to Chrisia Hospital because they need the expertise of patients that are on a medical aid and they are fee-paying. Each year, the central hospitals are required to set a target as to how much money they think they would generate from these fee-paying patients. The provincial government takes a certain amount, and the hospitals are able to retain a certain amount over and above the target that they set. That has also happened in the past. Each year, that target that is set is increased. So what happened in 2007, we set ourselves an increased target, and then there was a directive from the provincial government that we would not be able to retain any of the money that we generate from fee-paying patients, and all the money would go back to the province. So there's no incentive for us to try and offset some of the budget cut by, you know, an attempt to generate money. And I stand corrected, but I think the bulk of that money from that the province has taken was to fund the managerial posts at the Level 1 hospital. So it went into management and not into service delivery. Thank you. Can we address some of the other questions? On the question of consultation with the provincial government on the comprehensive service plan, when the initial draft plan was made public, the Faculty of Health Sciences collaboratively put together a substantial response to many of the issues in the comprehensive service plan. We object to many of the issues that we're talking about now. These issues were the submission from the faculty was reviewed by the Minister and the Director General, and virtually nothing that we submitted was accepted. The Minister reviewed it and unilaterally responded to each of the issues and disagreed with each of the issues that we raised. And the subsequent step was to issue the final version of the comprehensive service plan. So it wasn't, you know, proper consultation. It was an opportunity to respond, but most of our issues were turned down. And as far as ongoing interaction with the provincial government on the comprehensive service plan, our main interaction is with the Deputy Director General of Health. It is very difficult to get access to the Director General or anybody higher than that. So most of our interaction is with the Deputy Director General, and really there's very little two-way discussion about these things. It's a one-way directive. The Honourable Member's question about why the cut in 2010 budget, I think that's the question we're asking as well. Why are we cutting the budget when the workload is going to be increasing? That's most issues that directed to me.
There was also a question on the second year internship. Now, I do not have information on that. I don't know if Paul Chaparelli can comment about whether there is funding to the Central Hospital for the second year of the two-year internship.
Just for information, from my knowledge of working at Targeted Hospital, the funding for interns is actually a national program, and according to the number of interns in the country and where they're going to be allocated.
Sorry, Chairperson. This is just from my knowledge of working at Targeted Hospital. With regards to interns, the funding that is provided for intern training is made available from a national source and is determined by the number of interns in a country and where they are allocated to. So we anticipate that funding will be made available from a national source for the second year of internship. It is obviously now the first time that we have a second year of internship, because we now have this year the first group of two-year interns, and they will be in their second year in 2008. There will be funding for them.
Thank you. And I will deal with the questions of, there were two further questions from the lady on the left. The question was, do patients have to pay for themselves at Huske for the services? There is a sliding scale for paying services in the hospital. I think that it is well known. Mothers and children under 5 or 6, you know, go for free. And at Huske, you pay according to your means. There's a means test, but treatment is not denied on the basis of whether you can pay or not. So generally we treat you and we ask questions after about whether you can pay, which is a weakness of the system to some extent. So we never deny anyone treatment on the basis of inability to pay. I'll go to the questions by Mr. Magella, which I thought were very good questions. I'm sure Professor Khan will provide a copy of his presentation. You suggested that we were focusing on Kurske only to the exclusion of Tigerberg and Red Cross. I want to point out that we do work quite closely with colleagues at Tigerberg. Colleagues at Red Cross are part of the Faculty of Health Sciences now. And at previous occasions, such as when we visited Parliament of the Provincial Government, we were with our colleagues from Tigerberg. So, and some of the data, in fact, that you presented has been worked on together with colleagues at Tigerberg. The numbers that you saw for CSP have been inclusive of the colleagues from Tigerberg. We're just not sure how many people we could bring to this room. Otherwise, we would have brought an army of people if necessary. Now, he asked a key question. He said, why this dramatic escalation? And he used the right word, a disaster. There is a disaster here. And the disaster is related to the amount of illness that's occurred, the colliding epidemics that we're faced with. People are sick with, the HIV-AIDS epidemic is serious. The problem of injury and trauma is a big one. And finally, the rising epidemic of high blood pressure, diabetes, is major. So you're quite right, Honourable Member. This is a disaster we're facing. We're busy cutting back on our services into the face of a disaster. And this is why I like that slide, because no one chooses to go to an emergency unit in the middle of the night to be seen by a junior doctor. All right? The people who go there go because they have to. And if you look at the people who present to our emergency unit, because of the system, they come to us from the other referral centers. They are appropriate. They are not inappropriate referrals. About two-thirds of them get admitted, and many of them remain for about 24 hours, meaning they needed to be sorted out, as we usually say. Okay? There are just 5-minute kind of visits that need to be triaged here and there. You see that number is as a result of filtering. Okay? We took the minister, MEC, to see our front end of the hospital. And we asked him what he wanted us to do with the patients who were lying on stretchers that we just could not place. You just have to pay a visit to see that it is, we are in the middle, we are fiddling in the middle of a disaster.
If you go at that night, this increase 2003-2004 picked up quite dramatically in 2005-2006. Is this representative only of quarter scheme? Because there are other centers like the PF, Georgia, suffered the similar continuous events. What is the relationship, or you were just focusing on this 58% increase from 2004 to 2000? Why is this dramatic peak?
It illustrates the increase in demand for services, and you, as I said, you see it. You see it across the services. On an average, of course, I showed that the average was 6% across the whole health system. But there are those pressure points. There are those pressure points because you have to come to that emergency unit for certain special services, for highly specialized services that are not found elsewhere. You know, those are people who were referred by doctors from other services. And it just shows pent-up demand on the system to a particular point, because the emergency units at Tigerberg, Kruske, and Red Cross, they represent your tertiary level emergency units. These are people who are needing to be seen by the neurosurgeon, who are needing to be to have an MRI scan and so on. So you're seeing a focal point, the final common pathway of the system.
Thank you very much. Part of my questions have been asked by Honorable Waters.
but I will try to make some additions on those questions. Chair, I would rather say one needs to appreciate the hard work done by specialists in the stationary level and quaternary level. We really appreciate that fact. But I still reiterate the fact that this presentation doesn't actually reflect the levels of health services in the Western Cape. For instance, when you go to that page 11 of the presentation, this page, not the slided page, the slided document, there is a sentence which says, these funds will apparently be shifted in quoted, in inverted commas, from the central hospital to build the infrastructure of the district health services. Now, I just want to know, what is wrong indeed in that, if this shift is aimed at building the infrastructure of the district health service? Because to me, it's as if now there is a complaint that part of the money that we were getting from the allocated budget is now going to be taken from us and be redirected to those district health services. I pick up a problem there. And second to that, there is a sentence which says, where it is? Furthermore, the second paragraph, the ability of these institutions to produce new doctors and train medical specialists will be hampered. I need to be clarified as to how. Because at the end of the day, we are looking at the training of these medical specialists to go to those very same district level, to go to those very same primary health care services that we want to achieve in this country. So what are the problems in this? There is one thing, until I'm convinced, this program to me, that this presentation doesn't really represent all the levels that are aimed to be assisted in the province. Thank you, Chair.
It is not because their focus as the division they are working in specifically addresses this question. The mandate from them was not necessarily to address the Western Cape challenges, but to what extent they featured the Faculty of Health Sciences, do they perceive some of the pressures in healthcare? And therefore, in their own perspective, this is what they seek to address. And in doing so, as they were saying, that at a policy level, there is no problem. But I think that the challenge, they were saying, that don't enhance one aspect of a level by detrimentally affect another aspect of a level. And perhaps in their own, I'm not necessarily answering for the Professor Mayo's team. In their own perspective, therefore, seated there, you are then going to say you downscale some of the areas that Dr. Khan was raising, and raise and maybe shift them to level 2 or level 1. But concomitantly, you are not shifting the skill, the equipment, and other things to address the very needs that are actually competently could have been addressed at a higher level. And if you are doing so, there must be this level. And that's affecting some of the coordinating activities where you are explaining where the specialists, the people who have been absent. They will say that's my own understanding. I do get the point that it might not necessarily therefore be necessary a contradiction to take money from one level to a district level. Well, the district level, apart from the National Health Care, National Health Act, and they are very critical, but this committee demands perhaps the things that need further addressing. But I'm sure that listening to the questions, they will be responding. Honorable Mashiko.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question was partly being answered somehow, because I was very much concerned. It's just that the province here has been talked about, and then we'll be sending to the province. Because when they talk about treating the services being directed to people who actually are not from this province and the refugees, you ask yourself whether the budget plan had actually projected this influx of these people and whether they considered it in their budget plan. But Dr. Perez somehow referred to it. I don't know whether it was a satisfactory answer. And then my other question in this CSP was, if they started right now, is the infrastructure okay there? By infrastructure, referring to everything, the human resources, enough equipment and people, or enough buildings, or will they be using the very same facilities to address this in this switch to this CSP, because enough infrastructure will be needed for this shift of services. And my last one will be referring to, I will refer to the training of specialists, in the sense that how is it already addressing, I'm not going to be racial here, the intake of Black South Africans, the Black students. How are they admitted? Do you think do they receive enough consideration when they apply for training as medical specialist program registrars in your institution? That's what I'm asking.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question and one comment. The comment is, I'm looking forward to whenever the Provincial Department of Health comes to our committee to hear their views as well on the matter. It would be nice to, I think, for all of us to be informed from both sides. But just a question to Dr. Khan about the reduction in surgery times due to lack of funding. And you gave the example of the dialysis machines, where only 70 people at one time can be on the dialysis machines, and if you're the 71st, you said you get sent home to die. I mean, how bad is the situation? How many people are actually dying, in your view, because they can't receive surgery or procedures currently? And I believe with the comprehensive service plan, surgery time will be reduced even further. So I know it's your view, but how many people do you think will be dying then, in a year, or, you know, if you give us a time frame? Just to give us an idea as MPs how severe the situation is. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, Honorable Walters has asked the question that I wanted to ask, but I actually wanted to frame it in a positive way and to say, does it mean that the cars in the other time is generating a waiting list? Do we have serious waiting list that we should be crying about? Or are those people that are not getting opportunities in Sierra times in our hospitals here maybe finding services somewhere else other than in our hospitals? The other question that I actually just wanted to ask was the report that we had on the study that 50% of services that are being offered at the central hospitals are actually level 2 services. Now, with the new transformation that those hospitals now will be taken at district level for level 2 services, what is the serious problem? Are we saying that this 50% of level 2 services should be removed from the hospital to the current district hospitals? What will be the situation of the current health centers that are mainly dealing with level 2 services? And then what will be the impact on the central hospitals if this 50% is removed from the hospitals? What sort of service levels are we going to remain with? And then Do we have access to people or the health professionals at the hospital which are providing both levels of services? And then the health has been my initial question, which I actually asked, which I believe it has not been correctly interpreted, is the one on the increase of patients on the central hospitals vis-a-vis the regional hospitals. My question was referring actually to the fact that are we not seeing an increase in patients at the central hospitals because more resources are being made available to central hospitals, that more services or better services are provided as compared to the regional hospitals? I think in the nutshell that was my question, sir.
Thank you, Chen. Chen, just as to issues that we wish to raise. The one is, I mean, this issue of waiting lists for surgery is an area of concern, obviously. I just want to find out, are there no interaction or coordination between all hospitals with regard to, at one particular hospital, there may not be surgery scheduled for this particular week, and the very same surgery that is available at Grote Schuur could be easily performed by another hospital. I'm looking here at transferring a patient where it's possible to provide a kind of service. The reason why I'm saying it, my aunt has recently undergo a operation, a surgery, cervical cancer. Now, I went to visit her in the Easter River Hospital, and I was told there by her that she was informed she has to go home now. She's discharged because her doctor is going to make contact with Grote Schuur and find out whether they can put her on a waiting list there. I was a little bit concerned with regard to that. The next day I went back, in actual fact she called me to say she's now being readmitted to the hospital after being sent home. The same hospital. The same doctors who indicated that she has to be transferred, perform the surgery there. Now clearly that indicates to me that hospital there has somehow an arrangement with Grote Schuur or other hospitals, because they were also looking at Tigerberg, that where they can't provide a server, they can indeed transfer a patient there to do the surgery there. Now one would imagine that kind of thing ought to happen on a wider scale in the province, chairperson. That is the one issue. Secondly, I'm still not being given a sense of what the serious problem is with regard to the issue of transforming or in excess of taking away services that Grote Schuur as an academic hospital is providing to a level where it is appropriate, as indicated earlier in the presentation, being provided to increase and strengthen the infrastructure there. As I said earlier, to me it makes sense if you take away the work, but the expertise that perform that work, the equipment, etc., remains behind. You have mentioned that also. Now, I'm still not understanding clearly what is the major problem with that we would have with it. I certainly would want to imagine that a academic hospital who have to train students obviously need access to sufficient bodies, if one can put it in that way. And using the word crude word bodies, because I myself have gone through the very same process. I'm just thinking here, just now, all the point, whether there's any research being done to date, just to establish from the patients how do they feel about them being subject of studies. You see, because I remember at a hospital, an orthopedic hospital, I, as a child, had a number of operations, surgeries, in actual fact being surrounded by, I would say, all doctors, but they were all students, being touched by them, not actually being communicated to by any of them, but being an object of study. I don't have a problem. I think our health workers have to afford being must be afforded ample opportunities to study. But one certainly just wonder whether anyone has ever thought of asking patients how do you feel, because in my community, people are saying very clearly they are reluctant to go to the hospital if they are going to be surrounded by a lot of doctors who they know are students. And of course, doctors don't communicate with them; they communicate with one another. Chair. Lastly, a chairperson, I think it's very, very important for us as a portfolio committee to have an interaction with the province and hopefully invite, have the health faculty also present at that particular interaction to engage around many of the issues that they have raised. I'm very much aware that they are giving their perspective, and we don't have the province to exercise give the province's perspective on matters and to what extent this document doesn't indicate that there is a solution, Professor Moyosi. It's raised as a huge problem that we do not have enough health professionals in our country. And as a center that molds young health workers, to what extent can your capacity to deliver more students be increased to answer the challenge of acute shortage of health professionals that we have in this country? What are the kind of things that government should actually consider doing from your perspective to increase the your output to address the shortage that we have?
Thank you very much. We'll hand over to Professor Mayoso to report. I just want to say that I really want to emphasize this point once again so that we understand both the rationale and perhaps the methodology employed by the team to make the presentation. The rationale for this presentation is to get what are the respective challenges facing the department in the competency of Professor Mayosi. It was consciously not about what the province of the Western Cape is doing to address this challenge. Because if we conflate this particular issue, we actually not be able therefore to understand what was the purpose of the presentation and therefore how do we relate to the presentation given. And the presentation given is alerting policymakers and legislators to say, you people competent enough to deal with the challenge. This is what we are facing in the coalface. See yourselves, how then you respond to this particular challenge. And thereafter, it is up to us to say to the Department of Health nationally, this is what the process care and the health sciences is telling us. How do you respond? And it's always an important weapon for us so that we always don't necessarily easily imbibe what the Department of Health says, either in nationally or in the province. We have our own independent sources of information to corroborate whether indeed what is our stated ideals meets indeed in practice some of the challenges that are there. I mean, look at the Western Cape, what's the population in the Western Cape? 4 million. Let's say around 4 million.
Give a rough figure of 4 million. What is the rate of unemployment in the Western Cape? If we take the national figure using the Department of Labor definition of unemployment, maybe we'll arrive at another, maybe 20% of unemployment. And then if you translate that, maybe you're going to say how much is the Western Cape population that is uninsured, unlike with you and I, for medical insurance to go to private healthcare. Maybe the figure may be 60, 30, 40%, 50, 70% of the population.
75%.
What is it?
It's about 75%.
80% uninsured population. And this is what the Western Cape must face. And in the presentation they've given us a map of the district hospital. And in the previous presentation we had actually looked into the hospital revitalization plan, some of the hospitals that are in the CSIR report, it has recommended that Tigerberg should be demolished. You go to Tigerberg today, maybe some of us must visit. It's not a good hospital. CSIR has proposed that it be demolished. We don't know what has been done to do that. And therefore, you're going to find some of these prices that are taking place. And this report here says, and I think that's a national norm, my own view, that you will never put at an equilibrium the number of the doctors and the nurses. You must produce enough nurses. And that's not the function of a university. It's a function that we ourselves committed by closing down a number of the nursing colleges. And therefore, the consequence of our policy has greatly affected the production of the nurses. That's why the president, in his State of the Nation address, then said we must accelerate the reopening of the nursing colleges, which is our function here, that you must actually monitor, therefore, to what extent these hospitals are actually being reopened. I think let's cram this in our mind as we interact with this. But otherwise, we're going to make ourselves very terrible mistakes in addressing some of these issues. In this way, therefore, we will be able to relate in more informed terms the stated ideal of the CSP comprehensive service. The comprehensive service plan versus practice, the relationship between theory and practice that comes into play here. And some of them are clearly mentioned already. In fact, if you read some of the documents of this comprehensive service, it itself realizes the shortage of health allocation in terms of the budget. The critique of Dr. Khan says the problem is the Department of Health in the West Cape is budget driven. We must interrogate ourselves, is it the right policy to be budget-driven versus what Dr. Mayos was saying, that no one chooses to be ill. You objectively get ill due to the number of demands in yourself. And I think that's what is facing ourselves here. And therefore, if you are going to be looking, I think that was also the issue. We have not even come, what are the conditional grants in the Western Cape? And I think also the question of the per capita budget allocation in the Western Cape is higher than anywhere in the country. It's 1,200. Gauteng gets about 1,000 and other provinces get less. Why is it then that the Western Cape gets the highest per capita allocation in health is still facing this challenge? 1,200 Western Cape, Gauteng will be 1,000. The rest of the poor provinces, poorer than Western Cape, slide down. And I think these are some of the policy challenges we ourselves must actually face. And we must, because we are about actually answering and changing some of these dynamics ourselves. So I thought maybe it's always very important that we must come back to this question. And we ourselves, in 2003, am I right, Prof? We passed the National Health Act. To what extent has that National Health Act been implemented? We don't know. Now, they are telling us that the National Health Act, which we passed, says there must be these academic hospital complexes. that are centrally driven by the Department of Health and Minister of Health to alleviate some of the problems where they mitigate, the problems mitigate between the Khayelitsha Hospital versus the Hotel Kiev, where, whether we like it or not, certain operations will only be done at those specified levels. Primary health is not going to affect us, notwithstanding what we and Dr. Khan was saying, that at a given point, it's still important to shift this, but some of these operations can be dealt with more at a district and primary health level. But still, there will be still those that need your tertiary level. And I think that's the challenge we're facing. And I think Honor Magella is right, and I think we must pursue this at some point. But the problem must, like, we must interact with it. But nationally, we must interact with it. But we must then be able to clinically understand what is it that we want to derive out of this support. What then are the pushes we ourselves are going to make to ensure that at least some qualitative change takes place. Professor Mayo?
Good, thank you. I'm going to hand over to Professor Perez and Professor Jacob to deal with a very important matter, the question raised by Honorable Matimela, which speaks to the view that we do not represent the health service, that we use inverted commas to refer to the shift in resources, that they fail to understand how this actually hampers medical specialists. I think it's a very important issue that goes to the crux of the discussion here, because we like to see ourselves as actually legitimate participants in this particular process. Our use of embedded commas, that we lifted defendants directly from the budget speech. It was not because we were denigrating it or anything of that sort, but I think it's sufficiently important for us to ask the dean and the deputy dean to just deal with that issue.
I'd like to state up front that we are committed to primary health care, the primary health care approach. This is in all our documents, particularly the fact that our faculty has as lead the primary health care approach. So that is accepted. We accept that services need to be provided at every level of care and at the appropriate level. We train our students at the primary, secondary and tertiary levels of care. And not only that, we train them within community. So we not only train our students in Khayelitsha CHC, we also train them within the surrounding structures in that community. So I just want to state that up front, and you're absolutely right, there does need to be a shift of resources from between the levels of care, and in the past there's been an inappropriate concentration of resources at the tertiary level. However, what we are saying, and earlier you mentioned, Honourable Member, the once-off payment, what we are calling for, we are saying that additional resources needs to be placed within the budget so that tertiary level care services are not spoilt in order to make that shift of resources down to secondary and primary levels. There needs to be additional resources put in order to make the system work better. And that is where the once-off payment that we called for in our funding. We also conscious that what we have is a national mandate to produce doctors, audiologists, and medical specialists, speech therapists, etc., on the platform. But what is happening is that because of the changes in the platform, this will affect our ability to teach. For instance, a surgeon, in order to train a surgeon to be good with the knife and not make mistakes when cutting people, they need to have a certain number of operations that they need to perform. If you look at the decline in the number of operations performed, there are not sufficient operations for us to be able to train a number of surgeons that are required by the country. The National Health Department is calling for us to double the number of
medical doctors that we put out, the number of health professionals, and we agree there's a need in the country for that. But under the present situation, we cannot do that. In fact, if the service platform reduces any further, we have to consider reducing the number of health professionals that we train on the platform, because we need to train. We can't show people, our students from far, that is the way you do an operation, and show them pictures and dolls and things like that. They need to learn on real live bodies. They need to learn from people's diseases, how to treat those diseases. We also won't be able to treat, to show them how to be proper caring professionals if they are not learning on people that they must care for. So this is why we are speaking about this particular problem. A primary healthcare system is only as strong as its tertiary, secondary, and primary level systems. There must be a seamless way of referring people in order to meet the needs of this problem. So I agree with you, Honourable Member. Yes, there does need to be a shift of resources, but it has to be done in an orderly manner. It has to be done in a way that does not affect any level of service detrimentally. So, Professor Marion Jacobs has arrived, and she's the Dean of the Health Sciences Faculty, and I'd like her to make a comment on this as well.
Apologies for having come late. I hope that Professor Mayusi explained that I had another question. I just, on behalf of the faculty, Faculty of Health Sciences at UCT, want to thank you for the opportunity to meet with you. Because as I've heard the tail end of this conversation, I realize that we are in fact very privileged to have this opportunity. There are health sciences faculties outside of this room who would actually die to meet with this committee, and I hope that that opportunity will arise at some point. Just a few comments. I think the first comment that was probably made already is that the governance, the way in which academic health sciences are managed in the country, needs some attention. There is a prescription, as I heard the Honourable Member talk about, in the Health Act around academic health complexes, not academic hospital complexes. And I think that's quite important, because the academic health complex signals the fact that universities are no longer just focusing on hospitals and training of students in hospitals, but also focusing on the broader health platform, just to pick up on the point that you made earlier, remember. So I think it's complicated, the relationship between the Department of Health and the Department of Education is not formalized in any way. And so the universities and the provincial health departments to which they are linked get caught in this arrangement. And I think that the Portfolio Committee can do a lot to help sort that out. The second one is that the system of health care is prescribed by the Constitution, by the Health Act, and particularly by the intent to promote equity, between equity across the country. And I think that plays itself out in the calculation of the equitable share, which is for financing health care, but also impacts on all facilities of health sciences in the country. Each one of us has made a commitment to equity. We all have changed our curricula. We've changed what we teach the students, where we teach them, and what we expect them to do when they qualify. And I think all of us have made a commitment to making sure that we provide and produce those human resources that can work towards promoting equity for people in our country. And so where the students maybe before would have spent all their time being taught in places like Fritzke and Tigerberg, in Barra, in hospitals like that, they now also are taught in sites outside of the hospitals. And that means that they come into contact with real people in real communities like Yesterday in the places you mentioned earlier. So the problems are a few. The one is that there's not a clear model of governance for academic health sciences, which makes it hard for us. The second one is that there is a national policy called the modernization of tertiary services, which I'm sure you are aware of. The modernization of tertiary services, and I'm sure Professor Green Thompson could talk to that. The purpose of that policy was to identify where tertiary services fit into this whole system of equitable health care, and a system in which we recognize that you must have strong primary level care, strong districts, and strong secondary level hospitals, as well as tertiary care, to make things work for everybody. And in that policy of modernization of tertiary services, there was a clear recommendation that some hospitals, for instance, like Kruger Hospital, would have to do liver transplantation for everyone in the country that needed it. And this is one example. These scarce, highly specialized services can't be offered everywhere. So certain hospitals were designated to do that, and with that would come an appropriate funding. So if, for instance, Professor Khan has to do a liver transplant on someone from Limpopo, there would be some kind of recognition of funding that would follow that patient, which wouldn't have to impact on the Western tax budget. So the third challenge is that for academic health sciences, there are two sources of funding, and you may have spoken about this, Mukanya, the HPTDG and the National Tertiary Services Group, and that needs review. Now, what are the realities for us in the Western Cape? I think that the Western Cape has two sets of health pressures, health service pressures. The one set is that we know that there is a migration of patients and people generally from places where they can't find work, like the Eastern Cape, or maybe the Northern Cape. They move into Cape Town mostly, and they don't come with the equitable share that was allocated to them in the Eastern Cape budget or the Northern Cape budget. They come as themselves, and that puts pressure on the budget of the Western Cape, because the equitable share is based on the number of people who are declared to live here. The second one is the reality that we also do procedures for the rest of the country, and that's not adequately funded, we believe. I think that what has been helpful is that the Department of Health in the Western Cape has just completed a study on the Health Professions Training and Development Grant and the National Tertiary Services Grant, showing that that is underfunded and the budget is inadequate. And just to remind the Honourable Member that the Western Cape Health Department actually got a clear bill of health from the Auditor General most recently. So I think that the way in which the Department of Health in the Western Cape is using its money is appropriate, but it's not enough. Their backs are against the wall. They actually can't do more than they're doing. And what they're trying to do is to spend the money in support of this notion of equity to make sure that primary, secondary, and tertiary levels of care get enough funding. And so, in their wisdom, they've taken money from the tertiary to put it into primary. But what happens is what happens to your Honourable Minister, is that when you improve the services at that level of care, at the primary level of care, for people who may have cancer of the cervix. And I say this guardedly because this is an obstetrician gynecologist sitting next to me. At that level, a woman would have a pap smear, and I'm sure you know what that is. If that pap smear shows that there may be cancerous cells, she will then have to have a more sophisticated and more sophisticated procedures until eventually she would have to land up in a place like Kruger or Tigerberg or maybe even Livingston Hospital to have the right procedures and have the appropriate surgery where would want to have the best people, the best trained people to do it. Now, what happened, what likely that happened to her, is that she had the pap smear, she then was recalled perhaps to have a repeat, and it would not have been the complicated procedure done at that level. She would need to have that complicated procedure for cancer of the cervix at a tertiary hospital, where she could have both the surgery and everything else that she needed to have. So I think we know, and we've done research in this province, in Khayelitsha, which shows that 30% of people who are picked up at that level need to be referred to tertiary services. At National Faculties of Health Sciences, I indicated what we are doing with our students. And just to reassure this honorable minister here, the honorable member, sorry, I'm not familiar with it. We at the University of Cape Town don't have a proud record of having admitted black African students, because it was only in the late 80s that we eventually started admitting black African students. And I think that we are ashamed of that track record, and we're trying to do our best to put that right. And what we do is that we aggressively go after recruiting African students from rural areas and from the peri-urban areas. We go to schools and we talk at schools. We encourage students. We have a very good program of financial aid. And what we also have, and we'd like to show you at some time, is an intervention program for our students who falter, without making them feel like second-class citizens that come in and they are supported. Track record of graduation is great. So I wanted to say that I think that at a national level, we would appreciate if there would be some intervention on the governance of academic health sciences, on looking again at the financing and how it works in the province, and particularly on looking at the modernization of tertiary services. Because if Professor Khan could get funding for those liver transplants that he does for people from the national coffers, there wouldn't be the pressures on Professor Hausman's budget to also fund that. We take our students from everywhere. Our students, we are very proud of the fact that we have many students who come from other provinces to us. We hope that they return to those provinces, and we do the best we can to support them in that process. And so we feel that we are a national institution, and we're not a provincial institution. We are a national institution, but we work with the provincial health department. That's our platform, and we need to find a way to manage our national mandate as an education institution and our provincial mandate to deliver healthcare services. Thank you for an opportunity to speak, even though I came late.
Can we take that as the last input, honorable member? I think the submissions have been very good. We must indeed thank you, Professor Mayosa. I don't think it should be the last. I've been systematized my thinking. Maybe you'd also advise at some point in our interaction how we ensure that we take up this process further. Because you've raised issues. You didn't say what, Professor?
Marianne Jacobs.
Okay, Marianne Jacobs. Are you the one who made the study? That was the first.
No.
Professor Maria Jacob. What you were saying, that I think your presentation and the rest of the presentation that came before you are all quite illuminating and very good. We have made a request, I think, the staff here will get the memorial stick of your submission, Dr. Khan.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll be able to find time to type whatever you have made and submit to our members, to our staff here, so that it can also be distributed. What I think we should do, honorable members, is quite clear. I mean, one of the things now, you know, we just passed about a week ago the amendment to the Health Professions Act. You will recall that one of those amendments that that came out was the definition in the health profession of the student. I hope now you've actually understood why that amendment needs to come, given some of the points that have been raised by Professor Mayur, and because you must ensure that your students perform all the necessary things, not using the dummies, and therefore, when they make mistakes, they must be governed by the same legislation that governs health professions. I think, to me, I think it was quite good that that point is actually further expanded here. The other point on this CFP, I don't want to say what it means, but I hope so all of us understand it. But I think we may have to find further discussions around this particular point and see how we benchmark it to the presentation and submissions that have actually come here today. I think the Department of Health in the province has over expended around 209 million. I think it just indicates that the pressures, and the department itself in the province recognizes these pressures and some of the challenges that have actually been raised, including this question Professor Dr. Jacobs was raising on the equitable share in the provinces, and this, that if I'm taking from the Mpombo and I come to the Western Cape, I'm not taking along my equitable share. And I think we all know that the process around provinces, for instance, by the Ministry of Provincial and Local Government, State Nimufumati, sometimes this aspect of concurrent powers that comes into play, it may be some policy question we ourselves must interrogate. Well, why would you have a Department of Health at a province and a national level that then results to some of the problems that have been highlighted here? That might also just trick your thinking. I'm not saying this as a view, I'm just tricking your thinking here. But it is clear for us also that the very aspect of the equitable share, this use of the population, time whatever, to come up with a budget. We know the FSC has been dealing with this issue. There are people in comments around this particular question. But I think it's something we will need to look into. So I think we must find a way, therefore. I think from the Department of Health in the province and in the national, and as well as the presentation from Professor Mayur, what product comes out of it, I think for us could be a very much important point. I'm hoping that the people from the Department of Water Submission, and it was very good you came also, because we're able to take all the copious notes we're taking, and I think we must congratulate yourselves. Was a very good initiative, I must say. Because you'll be able to go back, you'll do your own planning, because we'll have to meet with you, as suggested by Honorable Matela, quickly, and relate this presentation, and I'm hoping you must also be present, because we don't want talking past each other. We must talk to find a solution. And no one is actually here guilty or not guilty. We're all collectively trying to find the best solution in the health system, and I'm sure we're also very fortunate that most of the time now the advisor to the minister, Professor Glenn Thompson, is always with us, and I think his advice both to us and some of the things he carries forward are actually valuable in this regard. That worries me, of course. The other point raised that people so important as yourselves, you try to meet the department, you find them uncontactable, just worries me. I don't know. I would have thought anyone who wants to meet the department jumps to meet with you. You can't be given a clerk or a secretary. Just some of these tendencies who are self-correct. We don't know the facts. It's always important for us to be responsive and be embrace whatever comes out here, so that you don't feel that the most important things you want to communicate, they must actually get a conveyor belt, because in the conveyor belt, there's a lot of erosion that takes place as information goes. Whereas if it comes straight, you actually know what is actually taking place in the discussion. Maybe some style of management that all of us must always interrogate as we grow in doing our work and all that. But I must really thank yourselves, I think, Professor Mayor, for insisting to meet with us. I think for a very good presentation. That also goes to your entirety of your team, Dr. Gondaye, Gonda Perez. It's always very exciting to see people like doing such a contribution. I remember here in 1986, I think we took a detour to specialize in disguise.
In disguise.
1986. We took a detour to specialize in disguise out of preparation for our army then. Unbeknown that she's now going to specialize actually feeling the danger. Now that we are free. Congratulations, I think, to all of you for this. And we are invited, I'm told, to lunch at 12:45 at Mark Building, which is just a building across here. If you all have time, just all go there. And thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you, yeah. I'll pick it up. Thank you.